back in the studio with Amy, Steve, and Heather, hopefully bringing us more dialectical understandings as we approach some of the large questions and draw out some of the themes from our earlier conversation. Let's start with this one. For all of you, it's very important to build somehow a culture as part of organizing that has different values, different mores, different expectations, different visions from those that predominate in the society. I'd like you to address that importance explicitly and maybe even then speculate, if you feel like it, because I certainly will, about some of the disadvantages and dangers of doing so. So, importance of building, well, let's just call it a counterculture, even though that has too many kind of hippie associations right now.
I think
This is Heather.
One of the things that I found most interesting, especially now that I am a mother myself, is, you know, these ideas about child rearing and about, you know, women's place in the workplace, you know, or not. And I appreciated how some of these wobbly women would say, you know, there was even wobbly men who would say, we want to make enough money to keep you at home and you don't have to work. And these women, you know, there's a letter where this woman says, we all need to make enough money, so if I marry you, it's because I can't live without you, not because I need you to provide for me. So this way of kind of articulating that capitalism shouldn't be the deciding factor on whether or not women go to work or stay home with their children is still a question that so many women face today. You know, when you look at, does my job make enough to even pay for me to have my kids in daycare? Or, you know, all different kinds of issues like that. I appreciate that the Wobblies provided different ways of thinking and examining some of their assumptions around what wages should be or what the ideal family should look like.
Yeah, when both Heather, and this is Steve, by the way, when both Heather and Amy were describing their research, it kind of dawned on me, you know, something, one of those things that, like, you knew on some level all along, but then it kind of clicks, was that how central building community is to building a powerful labor organization. Obviously, the Wobblies were about building a strong community. When you were talking, Amy, about mutual aid societies, how that can provide a new and very powerful model of organizing, and it kind of clicked with me that my own research, that how central building a community was to building the IWA, that this was more about than just organizing workers. It was about bringing in women's issues, and it was about bringing in the needs of a community, and especially in the 70s and 80s, about the communal needs for access to timber, and will they still have that? So I think, kind of, Norm, to get to your question, is that, you know, I think really successful organizing movements have been about more than just organizing. They've been about building new communities or taking existing communities and sometimes redirecting their energies.
Yeah, I'm glad that you all raised this question, and it's interesting to me that these same kind of issues that Heather was raising that were happening, you know, from 1905 to 1924, is it, about sort of like women's place in the union, women's place in the workplace, and, you know, issues around childcare are like still incredibly relevant today, for better or worse. And I think it's something that the IWW today recognizes and is still sort of struggling with, is like, how do we create a more inclusive union where we are supporting women and children? And so one thing that has been inspiring to me is that the Portland branch of the IWW has a Junior Wobblies program, and I'm on the committee for Junior Wobblies, and the purpose of that program is to bring kids into the union and to support parents through sort of childcare and also programming around children. And so I think a loftier goal is to sort of have Junior Wobblies be a place where children get to do their own organizing campaigns and get to be trained up as organizers. And of course, you know, that is a lofty goal, but I think it's something that is really incredibly important to work towards creating a more inclusive IWW, but also labor movement more broadly.
And giving us a different way of acting in this world that kind of augurs what a better world, better society would be.
Yeah, absolutely. So like building the new world in the shell of the old, as Marx would say.
It's a good old wobbly expression, actually.
Yeah.
Now, Heather addressed that earlier in a way that's broader than the three of you have responded to right now, talking, or at least talking in terms of some of the means toward that end. whole cultural programs. Nobody's mentioned sports leagues yet, that kind of thing as well. It's all necessary, and I agree with everything you've all said. At the same time, I want to just highlight a danger, which is why I posed this question. And that's repeatedly in history, political, labor, social organizations that have been very successful at building kind of alternative ways of being in society in an organized fashion have ended up having a stake in preserving those kinds of institutions in ways that were quite conservatizing. I think of the German Social Democratic movement, for instance, going into the 1920s, that again had its sports leagues and its halls to show radical movies. They didn't have to show comedy. Somehow they found movies with political content or made them. And they end up, when they're under pressure from outside, another example would be the Communist Party in France in 1968. They end up so attached to the institutions and the organization that they built that they lose all flexibility in terms of a kind of political response. And so it's crucial, and everything you've said I absolutely agree with, but there also were dangers. And I don't know if anybody wants to address that anything further, because I don't have a real answer to that. These are efforts we have to make, but we have to make them with our eyes open, aware of at least of the history that shows some deficiencies in how we've approached this before.
Yeah, Norm, you went back to what were some of the examples you gave. It was
German social democracy earlier.
Yeah, I don't think you even have to go that far and that far back. That's the story of the American mainstream labor movement in the Cold War. And that's also the story of the American mainstream labor movement in the late 60s and early 70s, when civil rights activists are trying to break into building trades or predominantly white professions, and some of those unions will not allow them in, and that creates new divides and new divisions, and in many ways a new conservative politics among some segments of the organized working class. So I think kind of what you said there is very much a good summation of, at least at the very least, American labor history in the 20th century.
Yeah, these are things we need to struggle with, and we don't have great answers to this point. Moving from that, there's another, well, there are many commonalities that I see in all your work. Each of you is concerned with building a movement or the decline of a movement. In Heather's case, of course, she ends the book in 1924 as the IWW, not only subject to repression, but to its own internal splits. We have to say that it's things that we did to ourselves also declines as a movement, as an organization. Steve, we didn't get a chance much at all to hear his research, but he talks about a time when labor and environmentalists, when the timber workers and environmentalists went pretty much hand in hand.
Indeed.
Troubled relationship, but hand in hand, and much, much less so now, the decline of that. And Amy, of course, is talking about a movement, a building right now. And so the question is, we're talking about labor, and as Steve just very aptly summarized, labor is part of a larger community. It's recognizing workers as community members also, but even beyond that, looking for support in the larger community and seeing allies in the larger community, and that's a two-way relationship, not just labor seeking support, as has too often been the case, a two-way relationship. What does it take to maintain? What insights can you offer from your studies of history in specific instances? What does it take actually to maintain a movement? This could get us back to, of course, the earlier question about the hobo wobblies versus the family man and which are easier to organize. But what are your insights? Because that's, again, a crucial question we face as we cycle through history, building really worthwhile movements, but then fall apart.
Well, I think one of the examples that popped into my head when Amy's talking about what some of the Burgerville workers are doing now is birth control agitation in the early 20th century, and how that was so initially tied to the IWW, to radicals. And this idea, you know, that reproductive choice and reproductive health is so essential to working people's lives and improving working people's lives, that it was really tied together. But unfortunately, like, the height of that radical birth control activism was right when the U.S. entered World War I, and it completely shifted people's priorities. And then the movement for birth control becomes a little more conservative, more based on doctors and, you know, sometimes tied to eugenics in certain areas. So, like, part of it is having those things that encompass the entire, you know, lives of workers. But how do you continue those things when there's big pressing issues? I think we see that today with so many things under attack, that like, how do you continue to be active when it feels like you're constantly in crisis?
And even the pretense of important issues on the outside, just a quick interjection, and that is they often start wars in order to deflect from, in order to undercut movements. But other thoughts?
Well, on the shifting gears a little bit on the topic of like community support, I think that community support has been incredibly important for the Burgerville Workers Union, and in particular because I hope all our listeners remember that the BVW called a boycott of Burgerville until Burgerville comes to the negotiating table and bargains in good faith. And so I hope that we don't have any scabs out there who are eating at Burgerville.
I don't think I probably need you to define the term scab, but I also don't need to push the red button here.
I don't have a good answer for you, Norm. And I'll say, when I teach labor history, this is kind of the theme I organize my class around, is the tension between solidarity and intersectionality, is how do you value people's different identities while at the same time finding commonality among those identities to form a movement. So really the question you're asking, I see, is one that has the American labor movement has always struggled with, is how do you define solidarity? Who gets included in those networks of solidarity, and what does it mean to privilege some identities over others?
And just approaching it from the other end, of course, we live in a dynamic economic system that changes constantly and undermines efforts. And that's something we need to learn to cope with as well in sustaining a movement. Amy's offered a bit of a suggestion, of course, in the mutual aid, bringing that into organizing. We're going to have to end there. There are many, many directions further we could have gone to.